Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Welcome to Football Social Daily, your daily Premier League show, where today we'll reflect on last night's top flight action. And it was a huge win for Newcastle United as their new stars shone in front of a rowdy St James's Park. They beat an Everton side under the guidance of new boss Frank Lampard. Just how big a challenge does Frank have on his hands? West Ham got the job done too against a struggling Watford in their fight for the top four, but it wasn't without its controversy as David Moyes chose to start the under fire Kurt Zouma in his team after those unsavoury off-field actions. And it was the same old story for Manchester United as they had all the chances but could only manage a 1-1 draw at Turf Moor with Burnley. We'll pick the bones out of those games as well as looking ahead to tonight's offering of four Premier League clashes with Manchester City, Aston Villa, Tottenham and Leeds all in action. Loads to go through on today's show, so let's not hang about. I'm Niall and we'll get stuck into the talking points today in the company of Matt Pidd and Ian Brannan. Hi guys.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very good, not too bad. Yeah, looking forward to more midweek Premier League action. Four games tonight, including both of your sides, Manchester City and Leeds, respectively, playing on the same day. Not against each other, though. I was hoping that maybe you would have come up against each other. That would have made for a good little preview podcast, but
we've already,
not to be
already done that one.
We went through that one. It was the after the 7-0, was it? The night after, was it?
It's not an experience I'm keen to repeat.
We'll move swiftly on then, for the sake of Ian's dignity as a football supporter. And we'll talk about the game, which I think is the elephant in the room from last night. It wasn't the best game, but it's certainly the one that's drawn the most talking points. And that's the one that took place at London Stadium between West Ham and Watford. The Hammers won the game by 1-0, thanks to a strike from Jared Bowen. But the big talking point, Matt, was that Kurt Zouma was surprisingly in David Moyes' starting 11. The obvious question is, should that have been the case? Should he have played? We discussed in detail on yesterday's show exactly what went down with that nasty video of Kurt Zouma deciding that he was going to kick his pet, which has brought outrage, and rightly so, amongst football fans and animal lovers and just general human beings from across social media and beyond to condemn Kurt Zouma's actions. But it didn't exactly set a great example from West Ham or David Moyes by putting him in the starting 11, in my opinion. What are your thoughts? Do you think he should have played?
Now, the last thing I want to be doing is talking about anything other than football on this podcast, but I have to give my opinion on what Kurt Zouma's done there. He shouldn't have even been anywhere the pitch for me. I don't think it sets a good example at all by having Kurt Zouma in that side last night. I mean, what he's done for me is absolutely abhorrent, vile. I've actually been put in Twitter jail for a week for giving my views on what he's done. You know, it seems okay for people to throw racist abuse at people constantly every week, but as soon as I have an opinion on someone who's been caught on film abusing a defenceless animal, you know, I'm banned for a week. You know, that really makes sense, doesn't it? But I basically said in so many words that, you know, people who abuse animals are down there with the lowest of the low in life. And, you know, I don't want to go on too much about it, but I've got to choose my words carefully. But David Moyes and West Ham, like you said, they've set a poor example by letting this man play last night. It's not right whatsoever, in my opinion. You know, footballers, they're supposed to be role models and looked up to by millions of the younger generation. And what sort of example does this set now? That it's okay to abuse animals as long as you're a decent footballer. You know, I guarantee you now, if it was a lesser player or a player in the reserves, they would have been out the door, no questions asked. For me, a fine isn't enough, a ban isn't enough, but again, it's all just my opinion. And like I said, it's not for me to say really, but you know, it's just, we've got to see what happens in the days and weeks to come. But yeah, like I said, the last thing I want to be doing is talking about this kind of thing on here, because I'm an animal lover myself, Niall, and I've got two cats at home, and I've not seen the video because I couldn't bring myself to watch it, but I've heard enough about it to know that it was absolutely disgusting. And I don't, to be honest, I don't know how he's showing his face in that stadium last night. I would have stayed at home if I was him.
I had to say that it was the elephant in the room because it absolutely is. And I don't think we could talk about last night's game without mentioning it. And you're spot on. We don't really want to be talking about these things on the podcast because effectively they've got nothing to do with the game we love and they've got no place in the game we love. So I think it's only right that we do discuss it in context. And the context here is that David Moyes has picked Zouma in the starting 11. And as much as we can condemn Zouma, and we should condemn Zouma for what he's done, does that say a lot about David Moyes as well, Ian, particularly because his, you know, reasoning for picking Zouma was he's basically good at football. I'm absolutely paraphrasing here, by the way, but his argument was that he's one of our better players and we need to win tonight. Now, if you're Kurt Zouma and the manager says you're playing tonight, you can't exactly turn around and say, no, I won't, Gaffer. So I think actually, as much as we can condemn Kurt Zouma, and we should for what he did, which was horrific, I also think that David Moyes deserves a fair amount of flack for even putting this situation to the forefront. I mean, what's your take, Ian, first of all, on the fact that Zouma played last night, and second of all, that Moyes effectively said that, oh, he's good at football, so he's going to play?
Well, I was surprised to see his name, you know, on the team sheet, and I wasn't sort of watching the game in any form, but I had social media open and so on, and I saw the reaction from a couple of friends of mine who are West Ham fans, who'd, you know, previously had their say on Zouma, saying, you know, that's him, get him out of our club kind of thing, we don't need this. You know, if he'd kicked at human, he wouldn't be playing. So why is it different for a cat? You know, and I can't believe we're even having this conversation, basically, because there are other players that we well know in football at the moment that are not playing for things that they've done whilst a police investigation is ongoing. And that is exactly the same with this. It is a police investigation. It just so happens to be a cat and not a person that's involved, right? So, yeah, he should face the same. I think what it says is that West Ham as a club really don't have any care for it because, you know, yes, David Moyes is the person who's picked him, but there are people further up the chain that have also allowed this to happen. And you look at the very top of the club here, you know, the Golds, the Sullivans, the Bradys, who would have had the authority to say, look, this player is not playing for our club until this is, at best, is sorted out. This has been allowed to happen through the club. The whole club are only interested in one thing. And I think it's not the first sort of indiscretion that they've had with things, you know, in their ownership. And it will be interesting to see how this actually does pan out as the police investigation continues. But, you know, the amount of journalists that I saw last night, they were staggered that Zouma was playing. This is not going to play out well, I assume, in the papers today. I haven't read them all. But, you know, this just creates for West Ham a whole, yeah, all right, he might be a good footballer, but, you know, they've caused themselves a PR problem for the whole club now.
I said this on yesterday's podcast, that we're getting into territory now where football decisions are overriding the morality of being a human being, and it shouldn't get like that. It should absolutely not get to that stage. But, you know, such is the money and power involved in the game now that West Ham need to finish in the Champions League because it's good for business. And if Kurt Zouma helps them finish in the Champions League by beating Watford last night, which they did, and they kept a clean sheet, he did his job as a defender, whether he should have been there or not. He was there and he did his job. But the point is, I guess, that I'm making is that we're in a situation now where people are only thinking about the material side of football and what comes out of the end of it and not him being a human being.
The moral compass of football right now is completely pointing towards the direction of business rather than humanity. That's what that says to me last night. You could see, like Ian just mentioned there, even West Ham fans was like, what? How can this man start? He was getting booed on the pitch last night. Moyes knew that that was coming, but what he's done there is gone, well, you know, the greater good of what goes on in the pitch is better than, you know, what the fans think. It's a sort of a slap in the face to them as well, I guarantee you. I mean, there would have been three or four people in the stadium last night who really didn't care about what happened rather than, you know, just, they'd rather him just start on the pitch rather than the humanity of the situation itself. And it's just got to be common sense prevailing. Moyes has to use common sense there, but maybe he's got pressure from the owners. I don't know. It like I said, it was just a shot last night that he was even anywhere near the pitch.
And that's the thing, like tomorrow night, The Apprentice is back on. Karen Brady is one of the, you know, mentors, leading lights in business at the side of Alan Sugar, showing these people how it should be done. What message does it send out to people running businesses that actually that she's quite happy with that? She's quite happy for a member of her staff, effectively, to go kicking an animal and then turn up for next day and everything's fine. You know, it sets a whole... You know, a whole horrible message, really, beyond football.
I'm with you, and I totally think that Brady, Golden, Sullivan should have stepped in. But for me, as much as we can condemn Zuma, and we should, and he is ultimately responsible and should be condemned for what he's done, David Moyes is the man who picks the team. David Moyes is the man who chooses to start in 11 and makes the decisions. David Moyes is a man with enough experience to have made a better decision than he did. So for me, we can slam Brady, Golden, Sullivan. Yes, they should have stepped in. But David Moyes, he needs to really think about what he's done last night. He had a real good opportunity to set an example, and he would have been given credit for making the decision to leave Zuma out. He didn't. In the end, Zuma was picked in the starting 11. Let's go back to the football. West Ham won the game 1-0. We talk about West Ham wanting to finish in the top four. It was an important result for them, Matt, but also good for the relegation sides as well, because Watford lost once again. So with all of the context of the games last night, Newcastle winning, Burnley drawing, West Ham beating Watford was good for the Hammers, but also good for the other teams at the bottom.
Absolutely, yeah. In the context of things, with West Ham's Champions League hopes, huge result for them last night. Obviously, United dropping points as well. United have still got a game in hand on them, but all West Ham can do now is just keep getting points in the games that are ahead of them. All they can keep doing is trying to win and hope that the teams around them start, you know, dropping points like United did last night. From a football point of view, Jared Bowen this season's been absolutely, you know, he's fantastic. He's a lot of people was sort of questioning like the step up from the Championship to the Premier League. Obviously, he's come from Hull City, where he had a great reputation there, but he's brought that up in tenfold into the Premier League. He's proven that he can come and do it in the Premier League. He doesn't just provide goals, he provides assists, he helps track back. He's got it all there, Jared Bowen. And, you know, West Ham, if they get into the Champions League next season, will have a huge part of him to thank for that. And they'll do well to keep hold of him. He's still young, he's still got a number of years ahead of him. I'm sure a number of the so-called bigger clubs, in inverted commas, will be sniffing around him. So, yeah, they've just got to keep picking up the results, West Ham. And, it'll be an interesting few weeks for them now.
Yeah, certainly. And I think we should mention Watford as well. Roy Hodgson's gone in there, just his second game as Watford manager. Two big games, one against Burnley, which they drew 0-0, and this one they lost 1-0 to West Ham. 1 point from two games so far, but they've been a lot harder to beat. They've been tighter at the back. Whether that will result in Watford dragging themselves out of trouble remains to be seen. But they lost 1-0 to West Ham last night. In the relegation fight, there was another huge game too. It took place at St. James's Park. Newcastle beat Everton by 3-1. And I must say, the noise when Newcastle scored their 3 goals was absolutely fantastic. The crowd were right behind them. For me, Kieran Trippier's free kick, Ian, was the standout in that 3-1 victory. Is that the difference that a bit of quality can make in a relegation fight, do you think?
Well, it's certainly helped them out so far, hasn't it? And, well, you know, you bring a quality player in and you get those quality moments. But it was a long time, it has been a long time, rather, since he scored. You know, he had all that time in Spain, and I don't think he actually found the net in La Liga, did he? But, you know, 3 games into his career in the Premier League, and he's doing it. Seems at home. There's been pictures on Instagram from his missus enjoying a Greggs. So it sounds like he's settling in nicely.
She's
to North
well
East life.
There.
Yeah. Fitting right in. So, you know, maybe he's just a bit happier here and getting on with it. And, you know, obviously need a bit of luck in it in every match. You know, he must feel good having had a few matches, literally, you know, three games, I think, and getting on the score sheet. And, you know, it seems to be going well for him. I think Newcastle sort of rode their luck a little bit, of course. You know, that's how it sort of goes in football, isn't it? You know, luck is a big part of it, and you've got to take your chances. Everton, I think, I don't know, this whole thing with changing the manager and sticking Frank in, they're in a very similar position to Leeds United, but, you know, I wouldn't be quite so confident if Leeds changed their manager right now. Do you know what I mean? I'm not sure if this is like going to be the move they hope it's going to be. I have to say, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I definitely think that Frank Lampard maybe realised how much of a task he's got on his hands last night. Now, it's never easy going to St James's Park, particularly when the fans are behind them, Matt, 52,000, hanging on every kick of the ball. But do you think the result shows that even after beating Brentford convincingly in the FA Cup at the weekend, back to Premier League action, tough game away from home against a side who will have so much to play for between now and the end of the season in Newcastle. Does it just show how big a task that Lampard's got to deal with?
Yeah, obviously the honeymoon period is over very, very quickly now for Frank Lampard. Decent result against Brentford over the weekend, 4-1 victory. It would have given the team a lot of confidence, but taking that into the Premier League obviously doesn't seem to have worked. What happened under Benitez was it was toxic. That's the only word I can actually think to describe of the atmosphere at the club there. They've brought in two fresh players with Van der Beek and Dele Alli. But they're going to take time to bed into the team and the system itself. And Lampard needs to get to know his players a little bit more, what the strengths and weaknesses are. He's not been there very long. And they went 1-0 up last night in fortunate circumstances, obviously. But, you know, the lead didn't last a minute. And that's a mentality thing. That's a sort of character thing that they need to work on. If they get the lead in a game, they need to just buckle down and start to, you know, keep clean sheets a little bit more, because, you know, they're in a relegation fight now, and obviously they're in there because they've not been able to keep the ball from out the net. So yeah, it's a big job for Lampard. I mean, we've seen the positive impact he can have. I mean, at Chelsea, he didn't have a great win rate at all, but, you know, we played decent football there. And another thing, he gave youth a chance, and Everton have got some good young players there. So it's just going to take time, but whether they have it now or not, you know, it's going to remain to be seen in May. Personally, I think they'll get themselves out of it, but, you know, it depends on the results for other clubs as well, because, you know, there's other clubs down there fighting for their lives. Burnley picked up a point last night, and, you know, it's just one of these things now. They're going to have to take it game by game. They're going to have to pick up the points at home. That's where they're going to have to rely on, you know, getting themselves out of this now. Start making Goodison Park a fortress again. Because over the years, it's been known as a place that's really, really tough to go, but teams nowadays go there and they're not scared at all. So, yeah, Lampard's got a job to do, and he's only got so many weeks to do it in.
Yeah, I love Goodison Park. I think it's a proper old-school ground. I've said it loads of times on this podcast before. When the atmosphere's booming there, it's a really great place to play football. And I think that'll be the key, Matt. You're right, the home games that Everton have at Goodison, the fans needing to get behind Lampard. And I think they will, because anything for them is better than Rafa Benitez, with all the links to Liverpool and the poor performances and the questionable tactics and stuff like that. So I think now that those Everton fans know they're in a scrap, and they will get behind Frank Lampard, particularly at Goodison Park. Let's talk about the final game that happened last night, Burnley 1, Manchester United 1 at a miserable turf moor. The rain was absolutely pounding in East Lancashire, and once again Manchester United are left this morning, Ian, ruined their missed chances. The first half, they had 12 shots, 5 on target. They scored once, they scored twice, they scored 3 times, 2 of them ruled out for VAR, which is kind of part of the game, unfortunately, for them. But in the second half, they weren't able to make that dominance count as Burnley came back into it. So again, United this morning probably thinking, if only we could have taken those chances.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been a frustration for Man United, and it's sort of the story of the season in many ways. And now they drop out of the top four as well, at least for the time being. And, you know, you look at Man United, you think Burnley are always a frustrating side to play against, I think, no matter who the opposition is. You know, Burnley are a frustrating side, and somebody always... classic British football, Sean Dyche, you know, Brexit football, as it's called, you know, sort of get stuck in and all that kind of stuff. Don't give them any room to play. But Man United, you look at the team that they put out, it was a strong team. They should have had the quality, you'd think, to eventually grind Burnley down, make them run for it and you know, get them on the fitness in the last 20 minutes, if nothing else. But a big point, though, for Burnley as well. I don't think it's enough. I think Burnley obviously had quite a few games in hand, and these games in hand are starting to run out. I know that Newcastle fans are starting to crow a little bit about their position. Of course, now they're out of the top three for the time being. And, you know, for Burnley, they've only got a couple of rolls of the dice left to really get something out of those games in hand. And it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. But, you know, for Manchester United, it's just frustrating. And I know... Ragnick has you know, said, you know, that look, this is a side that hasn't won anything for what, 10 years in terms of the league, so there's a reason deep-rooted.
Sorry, how long ago was that? How long has that been? Sorry.
It was at least in double. I'm sure it was at least in double figures. sadly, not triple figures. But yeah, you know. And he said that there must be a reason for that. Something deep rooted within the club is wrong, and he's made this suggestion in the press conference. I think was it yesterday or the day before? Look, you know, there is a problem at Man United. Nobody can put their finger on it. But ever since Fergie's gone, the mojo has left. Maybe he's got some sort of special power, like in Beauty and the Beast with the flower. I don't know. Maybe it's something like that. And he's left, and it's gone, and it's all crumbling. Anyway, shame for everybody else, isn't it? Nobody really cares apart from Man United fans, let's be honest.
Well, he's got that off his chest. The Leeds supporter and the Man City supporter. I knew that was going to happen on today's podcast. For Burnley, is this a bit of a turning point for them in a way? I saw one Burnley supporter suggest that Weghorst and Rodriguez were so impressive that those two are going to be the ones to turn around Burnley's season, Matt. I mean, there's still plenty of time to go, and they do have games in hand, in all fairness.
They're another team, Burnley, that are going to have to rely on the home results. I mean, United last night found it hard going to a cold, wet, windy Tuesday night in Burnley. And these are the games that they're going to have to get the points in. Weghorst is a Burnley player personified when you look at him. They've gone and sold Chris Wood, who is a massive centre-forward, and they've gone and bought an even bigger centre-forward. Is he 6 foot six, 6 foot seven, something like that? An absolute unit. Yeah. And he just caused absolute havoc for United last night. And him and Rodriguez combined to get Burnley's goal. And that's absolutely fantastic for Burnley. They can see now that they've got a little partnership striking up there. And obviously Rodriguez, we know from down the years, has been a thorn in United's side. He's done bits against United in the past. So yeah, it's a positive sign. They've still got quality players like McNeil, you know, Burnley, who can provide that creative side for them. Again, just the home results now, and hopefully can pick up a couple of decent results away along the way. So yeah, Sean Dyche is just going to have to just rely on his team to be solid. They're in a relegation fight, they know they are. It's been a long time coming for me, this, Burnley being in a position that they are now. The football that they play, like Ian was just saying there, is known as Brexit football. It's not what people see nowadays as good football, or perceive as good football. But if it works for Burnley, then why not? Why not keep playing that? Sean Dyche, traditional English manager, you're not going to see him start playing 4-3-3 with a false nine, are you? You know, so just take them for what they are. They're a throwback to what you think, look at in the 90s and the 80s and stuff like that. And it seems to work for them. And you know, I like Burnley. They're a good little football club in the Northwest. I like clubs in the Northwest being in the Premier League. So I hope they stay up. I hope that Sean Dyche gets given a little bit of money to spend in the summer if they do so, because we've seen in the past, I mean, they signed Carney from, what was it, Lyon, and that was like one of their club record signing. I don't know how much they're signing for, something like 12 million, 15 million, something like that. That's a club record signing. Do you know what I mean? That was Man City's record signing back in 2002 when they bought Nicolas Anelka, like 14 million. So that just goes to show you just how like sort of like tight it's been for Sean Dyche and the job that he's done so well with the lack of funds and the lack of budget that he's been given. So fair play to them.
I agree with what you say when you say it works for them, because so many times you've heard managers and even people on the podcast, to be fair, slag off Burnley for the way they play. And some people call it anti-football. There's no right or wrong way of playing football. I mean, everyone would love to play like Liverpool and Man City in the way they play, but it works for Burnley and it's kept them in the Premier League for 5 or 6 years. Might not be the case this time, but it's worked and it's caused problems for teams, as it did for Manchester United last night. Final score at Turf Moor was 1-1. There are 4 Premier League games tonight. We are not done yet with the Premier League chat. We'll have more for you after this here on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily, your daily Premier League show from Sport Social. And there are 4 top flight fixtures to take in tonight. There are also games tomorrow as well. We'll start in London, where Tottenham take on Southampton. They've got a few games in hand, do Spurs, over other top 4 contenders, but they just need to get those points on the board, don't they, Ian? I mean, it's all well and good Antonio Conte having a couple of games in hand on the likes of West Ham and Manchester United and Arsenal, but if they don't win those games, you're almost back where you started.
Well, yeah, exactly. You've got to make it stick, haven't you, if you've got any kind of advantage to cash in. And you know, these games are going to come thick and fast now. Now we're out of this little break, and really for you know, for Spurs, they've got ground to make up, haven't they? Particularly against their North London rival, as you mentioned, in Arsenal, and you know, that top four position is only 4 points away at the moment, but easily doable, and they've got the games in hand to certainly cement themselves in and among that that mix up. But yeah, it starts tonight against Southampton, who are not going to be an easy side to break down. You know, they've been playing pretty well recently, haven't they? And it's going to be an interesting game this evening. See if Harry Kane can continue his rich form that that he found at the weekend.
As for Southampton, really interesting comments made pre-match by their manager Ralf Hasenhüttl. Now, they're off the back of a decent 1-1 draw with your team, Manchester City, but that was ages ago, and we'll come on to City shortly. But as for Hasenhüttl, he's a strange guy, isn't he? Some of the things he comes out with. He cried about beating Liverpool. He complained about signings being made in January and them not being allowed to play in rescheduled games. And now he said that he might retire in 2024 as Southampton manager at the age of what would be, I think, 54 or 57, something like that. Those were his comments, allegedly. He's a bit of an odd guy, but he's someone who Southampton have found a bit of stability with despite the occasional 9-0 thrashing.
Yeah, he's come in there and he's come with a reputation for being the Austrian Klopp, I think that people was calling him. And you can see the comparisons, because Jurgen Klopp can come out with some questionable quotes and some questionable behaviour. But the way he's got Southampton playing, he has them. I mean, I seen him a couple of weeks ago playing against City, and they're a team that just likes to get amongst it and get about it and be physical and not allow teams too much time on the ball. They've got a good pressing game and they've got some decent players there. I think Ward-Prowse, their captain, their talisman, he sets the example for them all. And if they beat Tottenham tonight, they can get into the top 10, you know what I mean? Albeit, you know, there's a couple of games now that Leicester and Villa have got. But that's good for Southampton. That's good. I mean, I was saying a couple of weeks ago on the podcast that Southampton fans would just settle for mid-table obscurity, you know what I mean? Just stay in the Premier League, not get sucked into a relegation fight. They're not going to be challenging for any European places, just going to be in and about that middle ground and maybe get a little bit of a decent cup run going. But yeah, other than the occasional 9-0 thrashing like you mentioned there, Niall, and I'm sure it'd give you great pleasure to say that, they've done okay, and Ralf Hasenhüttl has done okay. So I don't know what he's saying there. Maybe he just wants people to talk about him more. Maybe he just wants a bit of attention. I don't know. But like you said, he's only a young manager.
I just think it's funny that he's going to retire having achieved absolutely nothing in the game.
Yeah, it does
it's
seem
not like
strange.
He's gone out on top.
No, it's not like he's won the FA Cup for Southampton and gone like, that's it, I'm done,
exactly.
Boys, you know what I mean? I'm out, I'm mic dropping now. Yeah, so it does seem a little bit strange, but maybe he's got his eyes on other ventures. Maybe he wants to start a business or something like that. I have absolutely no idea. But yeah, he's come in there to Southampton, who was in a sort of little bit of a turmoil sort of state when he came in. But he's come in there and he's nailed it down what he wanted from his players, and he seems to be getting that now on a weekly basis. And Tottenham will not find it easy against these tonight, like we didn't the other week, because they will come and they will work hard, and we know how Spurs can be Spursy. Spurs can just capitulate at any given moment, home or away. And obviously Tottenham do have home advantage tonight, but it wouldn't surprise me if Southampton went and got something there tonight, just because of how hard they work. And they've got that lad from Chelsea that's on loan, the young lad, I forget his name now, he's only 21, but he seems to know where the net is. And you've got Ward-Prowse, who's dangerous from set pieces, you know, from corners, free kicks, stuff like that. So yeah, Southampton can go there tonight and they can pick up points. They've just got to be on it.
Yeah, it's the Premier League, isn't it? There's no foregone conclusions, as we know. You know, there's always a risk of a team going to a better side, for want of a better term, and getting a result. And there's absolutely no question that Southampton are capable of that when they travel to Tottenham this evening. Now we're going to talk about Aston Villa versus Leeds at Villa Park. Give you a chance to get up on your soapbox, Ian Brannan. Leeds United, your team. Are we starting to see players slowly coming back now? Is the mood around the camp at Elland Road just starting to change a bit?
No, back to you. No. A little bit is the answer. I don't think there'll be any major comebacks tonight for the Villa game, but give it in the next couple of weeks, I think we are starting to see players coming back. The latest on the injuries at Leeds is Calvin Phillips and Liam Cooper, who've been out for such a long time, but you know, crucial to how the Leeds system operates, are in the final stages of recovery. They're not going to be back for another few weeks yet. You're looking at the start of March for them. Firpo, the defender, who's been playing pretty well, misses tonight, but they reckon he might be back for the next game at the weekend. Forshaw, Shackleton and Cresswell are all recovered. So there's three there that might be back in the mix tonight. The big one, though, is Bamford. He's missed 15 games this season and he's nowhere near coming back.
What's his injury, Ian? What is it that's actually been keeping him out? Is it something severe or just a niggle that won't go away?
I think it's what happened. From what I know, is that he had one injury. I think it was a hip injury. If memory serves me, and I am winging this off the top of my head, and he had this injury. He came back, and was it the Brentford match? He scored that last minute goal, and then I think he injured himself in the celebration. And I think it's an ankle injury or
it
some
is,
such.
Yeah, it says here, so I think, I'm not sure if this is an official line, but it says, Bamford has not improved. He continues with the problems at the bottom of his foot and has not started jogging. So the situation continues the same way.
It's just one of these that's going on and on and
Sorry,
on.
Sorry, guys, that reminds me of a situation with Loire a few years ago for Portsmouth when he got injured celebrating. Do you remember that? Yeah.
When of course
was it Redknapp that told him not to do the, he told him not to do the backflip and then he went and did it and ended up injured himself.
That's the most Portsmouth thing that could ever happen.
We've all done that. But that's a big one, you know, because Leeds are without an actual out and out striker. Bamford was, of course, in the England setup at the end of last season. He was Leeds' top scorer. He was one of the top scorers in the Premier League. Bizarrely, come the end of last season,
you should have signed one in January, really, shouldn't you? That's what Leeds should have done. Is that a failing from the board?
No. They were looking at. It could, in hindsight, maybe it is the reason. I think it's a Bielsa thing, right? They had the opportunity to take on a couple of players, and Van der Beek was one of them, and there was another. But I think either way, the players that have gone to Everton, I think Leeds could have had. But you know the baggage that goes with them in terms of the cash, you know, massive loan deals that are going to be really expensive for the club, even though you don't actually own the player. So they decided against it. And Bielsa's thing is very much, if you come into Leeds, you have to be firstly up to Bielsa's fitness standards before you're anywhere near the pitch. So it doesn't matter who you are, you could be Lionel Messi and you'd be, you know, playing in the reserves until you're fit enough, and indeed possibly in his career that might have happened. I don't know, because I think he has managed Messi before in Argentina, but there's a huge amount of work that goes in. You've got to learn the system, because he won't put a player in there until you're fully familiar with how it works. And he would rather, the way that Bielsa phrased it was that there were no options that would improve what we've got. So he doesn't want to just have players in there just for numbers. He wants improvement on what he's got. And he believes that that Joe Geldart, for example, is a better out-and-out striker than whatever else is available on the transfer market, because he knows the system. He's playing in the under-23s week in, week out. He's been playing there for years. He knows how it all works. And he would rather bring a kid in who knows the score and he knows he's fit than bring another player in who he doesn't know, never met, no idea about him, and he's got to sort of teach them the Mr. Miyagi ways from the start. So, that's where it sort of boils down to. And that's what he's going to have to do. You know, when it comes to the striker, it is going to be an opportunity for the likes of Geldart, who is undoubtedly going to be a massive star, as we've seen with Calvin Phillips. You know, give him a couple of years. You know, Geldart will be in and around the England team if he continues in the direction that he's going. Because I think if he gets a run in the team and really finds his feet, you know, he'll be banging them in for fun. So it's just that I think maybe Bielsa knows that he's got some decent kids coming through. Maybe they're just not quite ready yet, but he'd rather them than somebody in on loan who's just here for the payday kind of thing and just can't be bothered. And you've got to ask as well that these players that are coming out on loan from these big clubs, they're not in the starting lineups of their respective parent clubs for a reason. So, Bielsa would rather not have those. And stick at his plan, which is always how he's done it. He ain't going to change now. But yeah, better times are ahead. I'm not sure those better times are tonight, but they need to be. Leeds could do with a win for Leeds tonight would certainly sort of put some good distance between them and the bottom.
How worried are you about relegation? Are you kind of tentatively concerned? Are you not worried at all? Because if Villa turn you over tonight, that sucks you a little bit closer. And with the injuries and stuff like that, I think Leeds should be okay. But are you worried? Are fans worried? Is there kind of this sort of unspoken of nervousness around the club about potential relegation?
I think Leeds are always worried because I don't think, Leeds could be 5-0 up with 2 minutes left and you'll still find some fans there who are chewing their nails and think that they could lose 6-5 in the remaining minute. You know, it's sort of the Leeds way in many ways. And, you know, the good thing is, in a way, that Leeds are in this position of being a good few points clear of the relegation zone despite having, I think, at 1.9 first-choice players out. So, you know, it's if you can do that with your backup team, you've got to think where Leeds might have been if they'd have had a season where most of the players had stayed fit for. I mean, of course, you're going to miss players here and there, but to lose Bamford for 15 games is you know, that's going to harm anybody who he'd be playing for. The thinking is that this season of all seasons, the amount of points required to stay up is going to be lower than probably any because the way things are going. And I know the Athletic have fed the remaining fixtures into their master computer based on the stats so far. Obviously, things may change, but
there's
they've
such
got.
Those well,
I know, but they, but I, and I think this
it's a load of rubbish.
Well, no, actually, it must be correct because they've got Newcastle to go down. So absolutely nailed on. But I think when you look at the remaining fixtures that Leeds have got, they've got many of the big ones out of the way, or they will have had many of the big fixtures out of the way come what they call the run-in, you know, the final sort of 8 or 9 games. Leeds have got a relatively steady away period where their rivals around them have got to play the big four who are going to be going all at it. In the final closing throws of the season, Leeds should have enough quality. They've certainly got more quality than many of the sides below them. And you know, a bit of turbulence with Everton, maybe Brentford, you fancy, could still yet get dragged into all that. Good news, though, on the Athletic supercomputer has predicted that Burnley will miraculously be the one to escape the drop, and Newcastle, Watford, and Norwich City to go down. So we'll have to see if this pans out correct. But I think that the general feeling is that if Leeds can get another couple of wins, literally another 2 or 3 wins, that they should be all right, you know. But, you know, there's many twists and turns to come. I think if Leeds can get their, you know, the strength, their spine of their team back again with Cooper and Calvin Phillips back in the side, then I think things will calm down. Leeds have never played well without Calvin Phillips, and I think the fact they've actually got some results this time when he's been missing for so long is it's actually a better situation than I thought Leeds probably would be in. I fancied that Leeds might have been flirting with the bottom three, you know, pretty firmly by now if things had gone how they would have gone in previous seasons. But I think that they have got a bit more strength in depth, and as long as Rafinha, Phillips, Jack Harrison and so on can stay fit, I think they'll be all right. But yeah, the injuries keep coming. We could do with less of them. Thanks.
There's only one good place for a supercomputer, and that's landfill. The supercomputer from November predicted that there'd be 1 point between the top three teams at the end of the season, and Manchester City have definitely put paid to that prediction. And we'll talk about them next after this here on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back to the show. This is Football Social Daily, the daily Premier League podcast from Sport Social. Still two more Premier League fixtures to talk about, and we'll start at the Etihad Stadium where Manchester City welcome Brentford. And it feels like ages since that draw with Southampton on the 22nd of January in City's last Premier League game, Matt. The gap is 9 points between yourselves and Liverpool in second place. Now, we've mentioned already on this podcast that the Premier League is never easy and you can take nothing for granted. But with the way City have been playing and how good they are and the form that they're in and the dominance they've shown, this should be a routine victory for your side tonight, shouldn't it?
Yeah, you think so, wouldn't you? But you'll still speak to City fans like myself who just don't have 100% confidence in that. But at the end of the day, Brentford are not a walkover side. We played them back in December, and we was extremely lucky to come away from them with the 3 points. But we are at the Etihad tonight, and we know Man City at the Etihad can be a completely different prospect to the one that turns up at different grounds around the country. I expect players like Bernardo back in the side tonight. Got a rest against Fulham over the weekend. Rodri as well. So back to full strength, apart from Cole Palmer and Gabriel Jesus not being in the squad because of a little niggling injuries. At the end of the day, we just need to keep picking up the 3 points. Liverpool have got a game in hand on us, but we play them in April, and I think it all boils down to that game, to be honest. If we're not, obviously, you know, a few points more ahead by that point, Liverpool, for me, will keep picking up the points, and we will keep picking up the points. So it all boils down to that game in April. If we beat them in April at the Etihad, then for me, it's curtains for Liverpool's title charge. But Guardiola, he's handled some tough questions from the pressers yesterday. I don't know if you've seen it. People like filming Jack Grealish being out in a bar. Apparently, he'd been out for a meal with Riyad Mahrez and a couple of other people. And his response was, "Well, I'm only annoyed that they didn't invite me." And that for me is just like, you know, the way that Pep handles these kind of things, where people try and get under his skin and try and, you know, sort of like take his mind away from the task at hand. The way he handles that is absolutely fantastic. And the way City have been conducting themselves with the contract situations over the last week or so, it wouldn't surprise me if he signs a couple of years extension, because the club, the fans, everything just seems to be in harmony at the moment. And why would he want to go anywhere else? He's already said he would never manage another club in the Premier League. But to be honest, he's got everything he needs with us. He's got absolutely everything. And he's gonna have more money to spend in the summer, hopefully. Obviously, we've got Julian Alvarez, but he's going to probably go back on loan to River Plate at some point. And he's only young, he's 21. There's talks of City being the front runners now for Erling Haaland. Now, I won't believe it until City actually have him, you know, at the ground with a shirt in his hand, with his number on his back and holding a scout and giving the interview to the club website. That is the only time I'll believe it. But I can't see Erling Haaland wanting to come anywhere else apart from obviously Real Madrid. But Real Madrid have pulled out the race now, apparently. So yeah, we're the front runners. We could be Premier League champions. We could be champions of Europe. We could have the FA Cup, you know, all going well. But who knows? Who knows? City have just got to keep winning one game at a time. That's Pep Guardiola's philosophy. He never looks further than the game that's coming up next. And Brentford, no mugs. Thomas Frank's got a good squad there. He's brought most of them up from the Championship. They've got a sort of like a family sort of like unit there. The club, the fans, everyone seems to be together as one. They won't make it easy for us tonight. They won't make it easy for us tonight at all. But if City play their game and City just do what they do best and just keep the ball, play nice football, work for each other, press, then I can't see us having any problems tonight. But I have this little voice in the back of my head, which has come from years and years of supporting City in the dark days, that just says it could go wrong tonight. It could be a banana skin. And obviously, you know, Leeds relying on us for a result tonight, because I'm sure you, Leeds and Brentford are quite close together in the table. So I'm sure Ian will have one eye on that as well as the Villa game. So yeah, come on, City. I'm going to this game tonight as well. Yeah, so I'm quite looking forward to it. It'll be nice to be back at the Etihad. I went against Fulham at weekend as well. That was good. It was a decent game of football, and hopefully we get the same tonight.
Well, enjoy the game tonight against Brentford. As you say, Brentford might be worried about relegation at this stage. Thomas Frank has just been showing a few signs of losing his composure. We saw him sent off by a referee before the international break. We saw him complain when his side got beaten by Manchester United recently, saying that they absolutely destroyed Manchester United, yet they lost the game, I think, by a margin of 3 goals. So I just think it's one of those where he is just starting to feel the pressure, and survival in the Premier League for Brentford would be a great achievement, whether they finish one place above the dotted line or mid-table. But it's not going to be easy tonight against the City side who, as Matt says, appear to be firing on all cylinders. Everything seems to be going in the right direction at the Etihad Stadium, and that is the venue tonight, as Brentford are the visitors. Final game we're going to discuss on today's podcast, Norwich against Crystal Palace. Unfortunately for Canaries and Eagles fans, this one bottom of the billing on today's show, but we'll talk about it regardless. Norwich are back in the relegation zone after Newcastle beat Everton 3-1. I mean, we say this every week about Norwich, Ian, but they just have to win, don't they, to reapply the pressure back to Newcastle United, to keep the pressure on Burnley and Watford. They have to get 3 points, but are they good enough to do that against the Palace side that have impressed this season? in fits and starts.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a bit of an acid test for Palace in a way to sort of show what they're made of. Norwich really will need to be going for this. And as you say, they now have to match whatever else happens around them and more, really, if they want to get out of that relegation zone. Bad result for Norwich last night with Newcastle winning, of course, and that really does put pressure on them. And even that point for Burnley adds a bit more pressure too, turns the screw a little bit. And of course, you know, the loss for Watford sort of helps them out conversely as well slightly, but obviously three are going to go down. Can you see Norwich getting out of that bottom three? I think it's going to be a bit of a struggle. They're just the perennial yo-yo club at the minute, aren't they, of the last sort of decade or so. And I think Crystal Palace of this season, whilst we kind of associate their name of being the sort of side that always dabbles in danger in that sort of bottom five or so throughout the course of the Premier League history, they do have a bit more finesse about them this year with, you know, Patrick Vieira's brought that to them, and they seem a bit more of a solid outfit. And I fancy that Crystal Palace will do the job on Norwich. I don't know if you've seen this thing that's going around as well. It's again in The Athletic, but about who controls the territory in football. And yeah, it's an interesting map on how the various teams set up. But the bottom line is really that the clubs that are dabbling down the bottom really are you know, defending like hell and making the most of getting corners and free kicks. And Norwich are very much in that basket, but not quite as much as Burnley, who really the area they dominate is the corner flag. And that's sort of what it, but it shows where the action's happening. And you know, for Norwich, I'm just looking at their thing now. You know, it's very defensive. They're packing the defence. They're trying not to get beat, but they're really sort of giving little up front. And that's the difference between them and the likes of Crystal Palace, who perhaps have changed now under Vieira. And they are getting down the wing much more, and they're getting the crosses in. And that's where it's going to come from tonight. That's where the risk's going to come from this evening, I fancy.
Yeah, I think Norwich will go down. For some reason, we don't have the same feeling about Norwich as we have done some of the other clubs. Burnley have brought in Weghorst. They looked good last night against Manchester United. They've got an experienced manager in Sean Dyche who's used to this. They've got games in hand. Watford, they've got Roy Hodgson, someone who's been in this position before, someone who can make them more solid. They've still got Ismaïla Sarr to come back after winning the Africa Cup of Nations. Emmanuel Dennis back from suspension. How big an impact could those two players make? Newcastle, they've signed Kieran Trippier. They won 3-1 against Everton last night. They've picked up more points under Eddie Howe since he came to St. James's Park. They've picked up more points than any other relegation side. And if we look at all of those things and then factor Norwich into the equation, Norwich sold or let Todd Cantwell leave on loan to Bournemouth in the January window. But apart from that, there's not really too much in terms of that feel-good factor about Norwich City. So for me, I think we could see them as one of the teams that will be going down in the Premier League at the end of the season. Right, that's it for today's episode of Football Social Daily. Loads of football to talk about from both last night and the game set to take place tonight. And we'll do the same again, all over again, on tomorrow's episode, because there are games tomorrow and we'll talk about tonight's fixtures too. So make sure you hit subscribe and that way you won't miss that one. We'll see you there. This is Football Social Daily.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.